If you're like me, you're in heaven by now with that. That's great blues music. That's Alvin Queen on drums leading his group with There's Blues Everywhere. Ain't that the truth? It's from his 2006 album, I Ain't Looking At You. I don't know where they come up with the title sometimes of their albums, but I enjoy some of the offbeat ones like this. I Ain't Looking At You. Jesse Davis on alto sax, Terrell Stafford on trumpet and flugelhorn, Mike LaDon on the famed Hammond B3 organ, and Peter Bernstein on guitar. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and you know it's Free Your Mind Friday. This is our weekly sound-off, our weekly gathering place, where the opinions and observations and analyses of news events, news issues, and whatever else you think warrants further discussion and debate, it's all on the table at 888-874-4888. Feel free to speak your mind and feel free to help us free ours. Okay, let's start in New York with Jay. Hello, Jay. You're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Fine, thank you. How about you?
Good. Listen, I thought that the last 4 days' shows were absolutely enlightening, intelligent, all of those good things.
Thank you.
After sitting back and analyzing all of this, I'm sorry to say, in reality, it may mean absolutely nothing in regards to keeping this woman out of the White House or keeping this other crazo Trump out of the White House. Neither one of them, honestly, are fit to become or should be the president of the United States. Like the gentleman said, I heard on another show, they both are narcissists. It just seems to me that the American public are just so misinformed by the mainstream media, whose sole purpose is to cut a check. That's all they care about, is getting money from this tragic situation that the world is witnessing. Now, with this information that was presented over the last 4 days in regards to Ms. Clinton, doesn't get out into mainstream media and is not thoroughly investigated, then we will be in for a serious, serious situation.
Well, now, we're in for a serious situation right now. I think your point is well taken. It may or may not have any impact at all on Hillary Clinton's clinching of the nomination for the Democratic Party or her possible eventual win of the presidency. But that was not the point of this whole series. The point is exactly what you said, to share information that is not readily available. And that is one of the benefits, and that's one of the purposes of PRN, and certainly of Lead Stories, is to present information that is not readily available, that would help you, and in turn help others, to see things differently, to get additional information that will inform decisions and bring into focus just where we are. So I agree with you. It may have nothing at all in terms of impact on the eventual result, except that if it does serve the purpose of enlightening the audience as to what's going on. And by the way, it's going to continue. There's lots coming, having to do even with Boko Haram and the Clintons, and a lot more things are coming down the pike very shortly. So stay tuned, but continue.
Treat. I would like to just point this out to you. The information that you presented on the last 4 days, I have spoken out on a couple of other radio shows. And it seems like no one wants to even listen to what has been said or investigate what has been said. I'll give you a perfect example. George Curry, formerly or present of Emerge Magazine, was on a semi-national radio show, the Bev Smith program. And I mentioned some of the things that were being said by your guests. And I gave him his website, and I gave him the information. His first response was that all of these things was investigated already, and that there is nothing whatsoever in regards to any of that information being true about the Clinton Foundation. And it's just sad that this mainstream media will not even take into account or investigate what Mr. Cortell was writing or has written or will continue to write. And, you know, it's just absolutely frustrating.
But
you know,
the
good
first
thing
time.
Is we have you.
And here's the
and
thing.
And that's what's important.
Even Charles Ortel expects this reaction.
Right.
You know, when he was sounding the alarm about GE overvaluing its stock by several hundreds of billions of dollars,
right.
He was looked upon as a nut, as a quirky kind of guy, as somebody, you know, where did he come from? Except it was true. It's possible that here we have yet another example that he's saying things and he's proving them. All of the documentation for what he has been saying has been posted on his website, charlesortel.com. And I would dare say this, not even journalists do that. Okay,
right.
They don't share the documentation for a lot of their stories. He has shared the documentation so that you can see the credibility of what it is he's saying. The evidence is there, and it is not made up. It is from the source. So, and he's devoted a substantial amount of time to decoding what is going on with the Clinton Foundation. But have faith that at least you know, you are able to say today, you have a different appreciation and you have a new insight into this. And if it achieves just that, then this was a successful endeavor, that it enlightened you. It brought a new dimension about the Clintons to you, and it helps you make sense of the political landscape. Thanks so much, Jay, for your call today and for getting us started.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Gino from the Bronx, what have you to say?
Eutrice?
Yes.
You have upset me in unspeakable ways.
Oh, I'm happy about that.
My digestion was upset at work about a month and a half ago when you did your first birthday show. Or where you talked about your upbringing with, was it Claudia, your dad, and Gertrude, your mom?
Yes.
Yes. I thought I was in the safety of my cocoon at work, mopping the lunchroom of the gardener's floor. I said, I'm in a safe place, and you came on with that show, and you got me so wrought up, and I really got to call the Federal Communications Bureau on you. You're a dangerous woman. You with this internet, ping-ponging your thoughts all over the place, playing with my emotions the way you did. I could not eat my almond chocolate organic bar without digesting it. You had me in tears. You had me in laughter. It was an incredible show. And what I basically want to say is, really, it's one of the ones for the record books. It's really, I listen to a lot of radio. The honesty, your sincerity, dealing with what you'd been dealing with, the faith you have over the fear, it's an incredible testament. The statement you made, what is your statement, your dad said? You made a beautiful statement. I dare say the only way you can surpass that show, and I have an assignment for you, your reporting skills. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, if you haven't started to do it already, I'm going to ask you, and I'm surprised by the way you fellow listeners getting caught up with all these politicians, all these other things out there. We got a diamond in the rough here. Do you hear this lady speaking from the depths of her being? You know how we all get a little shaky when it comes to our mortality? And here's a woman affirming the power of the spirit, something that is no less than water, actually more than water, that can't be eliminated. And there is a testament in the midst of what this woman has been dealing with to all of us. And what do? We get caught up in the hypnosis of Medea with her snakes over there on those television screens to talk about all these people, mostly other than Bernie, who's still got to be educated on foreign policies, who mostly don't care about us. And here's a woman putting her life out there. She could be sitting there in a hammock eating
truffles.
What is that good food? What is it?
Truffles. Chocolate truffles.
Well, I was thinking of mangoes, but I couldn't come up with the word right now. Maybe I'm getting a little personal there. But my assignment, and again, I want to say, I've been trying to get through. You kept me from going to the gym. You caused me to be late for work one day, so with my help. And it was well worth it. But I have an assignment for you, and I'm going to get back to the audience out there all over the place, the country, and who knows where else. How not can you, and there was a couple of folks, how not can you not speak, is that proper English, about what this woman did that day and what she basically embodies? You, Eutrice, you, and I've been around a lot of, you know, people passing in my life, especially last year, like you with friends. I got to say, it is such an inspiration that I will remember that show. Honestly, I just hit 60. I will remember that show if I match Moses.
And wow. this is quite a testimonial. Thank you so much, Gino,
well,
for that.
Well, before you go, I got my assignment for you. I would like you, don't you get away from that one. I would like you, young
thank
lady.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
your assignment. Don't go yet. Here's your assignment. I want you to write a book about your life with all the folks who inspired you, starting with your family, and then the people that you read about who inspired world history and people in America, and just imbue it and bring that notion also to the illness of the body politic and illness of your physical body at that time, and the transformation, transmutation, regeneration that's going on with all the bodies, and what the answer is to this dilemma, the lightness that you could bring in this dark time. I'm serious, Eutrice. You have a strong, beautiful, inspiring message. I hope you write a book about your life. And are you doing that or thinking of doing that? Or are you too humble about it?
You live your life every day. There are people who are extraordinarily inspiring to me, and I meet them every day on this program. People like you. People
Listen,
like
Eutrice,
others.
No, you're not going to do that
their,
one. Eutrice, we have not been dealing with, we have not been at death's door, Eutrice, the way you have been. And I'm telling you, that's a different degree now. Okay, it's courageous to even make a phone call. And I understand the people out there, Harvey and all the rest of them, and that the professor calls you the professor and the lady and out in Texas. You got beautiful souls calling in, I agree. And these are people who are not zombies, you know, walking around mindlessly. They really know, you know, something is wrong, and they know that there's answers, and a lot of them are provided through you and your show. And I just want to say, and the rest of the, I mean, I just listened to that show with Gary, and I know he interrupted your show 15 minutes last week with Daniel Sheehan. He's given a whole synopsis of what's been going on that even Roosevelt and Kennedy knew about, and they tried to kill Roosevelt, and they did kill Kennedy. And going back to, you know, Alexander Hamilton going for the bankers or to the Civil War, it's a great synopsis with a mind that was incredibly putting a searchlight on what's going on underneath it with the fascists and the connection with the Nazis. But not to go into that direction, because evil is very fascinating, I won't deny it. But what's more fascinating to me as I go along is the source of all life and that spirit that never lets us down, always upholds us, always inspires us, always gives us hope, always gives us a sense that we are a part of the eternal. But you, Utrecht, facing the way you are, getting the diagnosis on this very day you didn't feel so good, and hearing you speak from the hospital, I'm telling you, I know there's a beautiful thing about humility. The humblest people should be the one in charge of things. But I'm asking you again strongly, please make a little attempt. And I know I ain't going to be speaking only about you. It'll be speaking about others. That's your nature. But you can put a little portion in about you, what you've been dealing with, and inspire those out there who are dealing with the sicknesses. Many people have gone and many will go. But you are on a path of what it's all about and how to keep the body healthy, how to prevent it from getting sick, not to give in to these debt merchants, whether it be with the health or the vaccines or, you know, what's in the foods. They even know the cold cuts cause cancer like cigarettes, but they keep selling it. So we know what's up. So, But you on the path of affirming what the Creator put there without all the 35 pounds of additives, dyes, preservatives, and the most important, the mental, spiritual attitude of that faith and that calmness, because the worst thing is fear. You are really embodying that in our mystery tree. So please. Thank you so much.
You just bolstered my ego there for a minute, but mostly my spirit. Thank you so much, Gino, for your call
today.
You're
welcome. God bless you, Utrecht.
Thank you. You too. Joel from New York, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Utrecht, how you doing?
Okay. What's going on with you?
Good. Well, actually, I thought that the reportage this week was fantastic.
Thank you.
Hello?
More coming.
I'm getting a little beep. Are you getting a little beep on your end?
No.
Oh, okay, I'll continue. So I thought the reportage, as I said, was great. Let's hope it leads to the downfall of Lady Macbeth. That would be very interesting. And, of course, no matter what happens, we still have to fill the vacuum because there's a vacuum out there and nothing real is really being discussed. So I want to talk about something real again and sort of continue about what I was talking about last week. Last week I mentioned that President Obama was heading to Hiroshima, and I talked a little bit about the tragedy of the use of the two bombs because they were unnecessary. They were, as you recall, they were done primarily to send a message to the Soviet Union to keep out of North Asia, and they used the Japanese people as fodder for their policy. And what I want to do today is sort of continue along those lines but move away from the history and show how Obama's arrival in Japan this week also highlighted the hypocritical and cynical attitudes of policymakers and of the president himself on the constant relevant issues. Of course, he didn't apologize, as we saw, for the slaughter of more than 200,000 Japanese citizens. And he didn't really address the lingering policy-related effects of the war, such as the highly unpopular U.S. military occupation of Okinawa. Even the lunatic Abe was forced to criticize, I don't know if you saw this.
Yes,
I did. It really was quite something. You know, there are felonies in the Okinawa that occur every 2 weeks, and they're serious. And this one that Abe referenced was rape, but serious felonies. It seems that Obama is unlikely to touch on anything of substance whenever he goes abroad. But I want to mention a couple of subjects that relate to Japan that I think merit close scrutiny. First, I think, is the fact that that we're now into the 70th year, I think, of a permanent military presence, U.S. permanent military presence in Japan. And I can tell you that it is deeply reviled by the majority of the Japanese people, especially the citizens of Okinawa. who, as you know, regularly and continuously protest the occupation. I think there's something like 40 installations in Okinawa last time I made count. And Abe, as well as Obama, you know, discussed the continued friendship and partnership between the two countries, but the reality is that it remains a master-client relationship. You know, that's a continuum that's been going on for well over half a century. Second thing that wasn't discussed, but is so obvious, is the question of nuclear weapons. I mean, they might have talked about it, for all I know, in general terms. They probably did, but I'm sure it was veiled in the typically flowery but utterly vacuous rhetoric that we get from Obama and the others. I wish an intrepid reporter might have ventured to ask Obama why, you know, despite his winning of the Nobel Peace Prize, he has presided over an administration that will spend more than $1 trillion upgrading, modernizing, and expanding the nuclear arsenal. And then there's another thing that I thought of as well. You know, when he was a student at Columbia University a number of decades ago, he, as we learned from his own autobiography, waxed poetic about disarmament. But he has spent two terms in office providing tens of billions of dollars to nuclear-armed Israel, raising the amount of U.S. aid to Tel Aviv to historical levels. And two years ago, the administration also enthusiastically signed a new nuclear deal with the U.K., which intends to, you know, maintain viable nuclear forces in Britain for the foreseeable future. And so while Obama and his coterie of spin doctors shaped this anti-nuclear legacy with talk of, you know, nuclear deals, like the nuclear deal with Iran, a country which has no nuclear weapons, I think all of the cynicism is impossible to ignore. Obama has, in fact, done everything to promote nuclear proliferation, including the absolutely insane, not talked about because of the continuous coverage of this election farce, but including the absolutely insane new U.S. missile defense, so-called defense system in Eastern Europe, which almost by definition forces Russia to upgrade and expand its own arsenal, including its nuclear stockpile, as a countermeasure. And finally, there's the irradiated elephant in the room, Fukushima, and the ongoing cover-up that's been going on for nearly 6 years now. What's really happening there lurks in the background of all discussion about nuclear issues in Japan. Nobody should hold their breath for even a whisper about this. It's really still unfolding environmental catastrophe, which the Japanese government has gone to great lengths to down the memory hole. So rather than formally apologizing to the Japanese people for the grave crimes of the government, Obama pulled his usual deal of looking forward and not backward. Let me just finish by saying that his policy is so hollow that it calls to mind the utterly reprehensible decision by Obama not to investigate or prosecute the Bush administration criminals involved in torture. Rather, Obama offers the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He offers an escalation of tensions with China. Rather than working for peace, as one might expect from a laureate, he will continue to champion his pivot to Asia, which has yielded little in terms of peace, but much in terms of U.S. military presence. So Obama's visit to Japan, like his allegedly great successes in Iran and Cuba, will change nothing. He said a few words, then he leaves. And he's soon going to leave office with a still more dangerous world than he entered. More nukes, more war, more destruction. And this from our Peace Prize president. So that's what I have to say about that.
Don't forget, as well, there is a series that we did here with Paul DiRienzo reporting on America's Fukushima and the disastrous state of America's nuclear program. And in that sense, there is a commonality here, both in the history of nuclear use and the nuclear buildup in the United States, but also in the tragic effect that it has had and continues to have with lax governmental regulation. So
right.
it was startling to me that we saw that. But I would ask Paul to update us on the irony of that, the visit to Hiroshima,
yeah.
and of course Fukushima being a major issue, but it is also here in the United States. Thanks
a lot,
Joel, for your call today.
Sure.
Chicago, Henry, what's going on?
Hi, Chase. How's it going?
Good. I'm fine.
All right.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I know the caller before, Joel, was a little bit over the top, but there's not much I can disagree with him on. And, you know me, I regard you highly as the modern-day Ida B. Wells. And if you don't have a biographer for that book, I will volunteer to do that. I agree with him wholeheartedly that a book needs to be written about your life. So,
oh my gosh, you could get that in about 2 seconds flat. You know,
so
I'm here like everybody else. We're just trying to get from one point to another, and hopefully, you know, without causing too much harm to others or too much harm to yourself. That's basically the story.
Put me on that list as the volunteers for that biography for your book, okay?
What's going on in Chicago?
Well, you had an interesting 4 days in regards to the Clinton Foundation. Very informative, a lot of things. I mean, I knew about some of the things that the Clinton Foundation, but it really went into depth about some things that just really, you know, shocked and surprised me and what they got away with. But there's a situation here in Chicago that kind of, not parallels on the same scale of illegal activity, but there's a foundation here called the MacArthur Foundation, which started this program called Benefit Chicago. And it's some sort of $100 million program that's going to go into, as usual, the black and brown communities. And they're going to dish out loans, loans to nonprofit businesses, to social impact businesses, and even to individuals. Now, the thing is that, okay, why are we giving loans to people who are economically deprived? I mean, don't we have enough, you know, fast cash loans in the area, in these poor areas already? So it just really bugs me that they're raising all this money to give out loans to low-income areas, and it just really bugs me about that. So, unfortunately, this is all, I guess this is all legal, you know, but you know it really. When I was listening to the show all week, it was sort of like, I compare it to, you know, them raping the poor community when they don't even have enough money to, you know, to maintain a steady life. And also, too, I want to talk about media propaganda. Last week, a woman here in Chicago, Yvonne Williams, she was shot as an innocent bystander, as the media reported, over a quote-unquote gang crossfire. A young man was also injured in the shooting as well. Now, here's the take on it, because apparently there was somebody who personally knew the young man, and the media reported him as a quote-unquote documented gang member. So what I found out from this individual was the young man actually was getting his life together, and I guess he was the target of whoever was, you know, going after him. But the media reported it as a crossfire. So the thing is that in the definition of a crossfire, there's basically back and forth between, you know, two combatants. Well, apparently there was only one gunman, and he was aiming after the guy who was, you know, a quote-unquote documented gang member. Apparently this guy used to be in the gang, you know, years ago. He got out, he got a job, he straightened out his life, and he's actually a mentor for a nonprofit organization of young black males. And it's just sad that you know, the media here is still sensationalizing, you know, this violence that's going on, which is very important to know, but, you know, they're misreporting all this stuff now, you know? And it's unfortunate because everybody was, like, wishing, like, you know, I hope they, why did the woman, because the woman ended up dying of her injuries, and the guy who was actually targeted actually is still in the hospital in intensive care. But at the same time, it's like, you know, people are talking about, well, you know, I wish the guy would, you know, would have died instead of the innocent bystander. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why do we have to have, you know, certain attitudes like that? And it's because, like I said, the media is misreporting this information. There was no crossfire. The young man who was shot wasn't shooting back at the gunman. He was trying to get away just like everybody else. So it just really irks me when, you know, you see stuff like this and then you hear the report from people who are, you know, who are there at the events telling you a different story.
Mm-hmm. But this is par for the course. The idea is that even among a so-called liberal media, mainstream media, the racial prejudices are so deep that they need not consider the consequences of these kinds of errors, because the community doesn't make anybody pay. They just accept, they made another mistake, they continued the same pattern, and they leave it at that. But these are seen as politically unprotected communities, and you can do just about anything and get away with it. Nobody speaks up for the community. Nobody speaks from the community. Nobody holds anybody accountable for these kinds of things that are going on in media and outside of media. So you find these kinds of errors being par for the course. And the reporter gets a notch on his or her belt as yet another story filed. You know how many so-called experts I know in media who literally built their careers on this kind of, crazy reporting? And much of what they've reported, you know, they got bylines and everything, but the substance is wrong. The facts are wrong. The whole thrust of the article is wrong. But it matters not.
But
it really doesn't matter.
Do you think this is an error? I mean, honestly, to me, you know,
no, it's
like
bad reporting. Very poor reporting.
It's almost like it's kind of like marketing, where you have these buzzwords like crossfire and documented gang member to sensationalize the whole story and get everybody's emotions, you know, involved
in
this.
It's reported that way because A, most of the information is coming from law enforcement sources. B, the reporter and the editor of the reporter feel no obligation at all to actually do good journalism because the story essentially concerns black people. And you don't have to take too much care about whether your facts are right.
Okay.
You know, you just write it and you get a headline that says about yet another shooting going on and more violence and all of this kind of stuff. And in service of building on that perception, you let all the obligations to good journalism go by the wayside. You don't have to get all exercised. They will never be so casual about writing, even about Hillary Clinton, in a casual way. They'll never be that casual about it.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Henry, for your call. Good to hear from you.
All right, good to hear from you. Thanks.
Cincinnati is next. Dwight, you're on the air.
You didn't know it, Utrice, but I love you. Hopefully,
thank you,
you
so
you
much.
Should, you should
thank
know.
You.
If you.
Same here.
If you appreciate yourself appropriately, you would know that we love you.
Thank you. Yes, I do.
If my phone peters out, the main thing I want to do is I want permission from you to send you a DVD of a documentary made on police the justice system in Cincinnati. And it is great. The movie, I sent it to Salim Wakil in Chicago, mm-hmm. and he commented that the movie had him in tears. And, you know, he's not, you know,
acceptable. I know Salim quite well, yes.
Yes. But the movie, you know, I would like you to give me a mailing address so I can send it to you, and then I want to move on to a different subject.
Well, keep talking, and lead stories email is leadstories@gmail.com.
Okay, I get the email. What I want is a mailing address so that I can send you snail mail a DVD.
All right, send me your information via leadstories@gmail.com, and then we'll go from there.
Okay,
your contact
I'll
info.
I'll do that as soon as I hang up. The other subject, you know, this thing about Africa Bambaataa is swirling around New York and hopefully elsewhere about, and I don't say this alleged child molestation, you know, child molestation by this guy. And I'm a victim of child molestation myself. So I kind of got an antenna, you know, I can tell, you know, he's guilty. And they're going to have a meeting or a lecture, or hopefully organizational meeting of the victims of child molestation. And they have put out a call for people to come up there to New York in July 22nd. And I will be there. But, you know, what I want to say is that men who have been molested as children are stepping up. They are talking about what has happened to them. I've been doing it here in Cincinnati for 30 years, and frequently I get all kinds of taunting. Oh, you were weak. I mean, you know, just the most vile comments. And the brothers in New York are receiving the same types of comments on the internet. You know, that's the home for victim shaming and stuff, you know, that internet. So I'm just hoping that everybody around the country knows about this, or they're going online, because there's a lot of information on, like, Sonnetter TV videos that the victims are putting up. And this issue is so rampant. You know, we live and say, oh, them Catholic priests and all that. Hey, them Negro preachers right down there at your Baptist church doing the same thing. You know, they ran through my family. You know, man, I just got a whole, look, I'm one of 11. Six of my siblings, including myself, have been molested as children, you know, and, you know, we as a people just, you know, need to do something about this. Stop putting it off on somebody else. It's so bad in our community because we refuse to talk about it. But we victims, we standing up. And
to your knowledge, let's just say in your own experience, how widespread okay. is sexual predation in the African-American community?
Well, as I see it, six out of my 11 siblings have been molested as children. Six of 11. And it may be, and it's not like one person. You know, this is like different years and different places and different circumstances and all this kind of stuff. You know, it is very wide. Look, I talk to people all the time because I talk about child molestation, about, you know, myself. I talk about my case like I'm talking about the weather. I have no shame. I have nothing to be ashamed of. But I hear all the time, so many people, I tell them my story and they say, me too. But then they don't want to come out. I've got one guy who forgot that he told me that he was molested. He forgot he told me that about 2 years ago. And then in the last couple of weeks, he's come out trying to shame me in the most vile terms, you know, on this Facebook, you know, just so unbelievably vile and, you know, unempathetic and, you know, just terrible. And then he's a victim himself. So, you know, it's so widespread. I don't know if it's 50% of us, men and women, but it is very, very, very high. And we need to start doing something about it to protect the kids. You know, I'm 64, you know, but it's 10-year-old kids out there now being molested. And you know, like I say, I'll be in New York, Jay. I'll be up there, and we can meet then.
Are you there, Dwight? Oh, we lost Dwight. He did predict that his phone was going to give out, but what a sobering comment and commentary. Certainly it is an issue. I myself know quite a few people in the community who stunned me over many years when they revealed to me that they were victims of sexual assault. And it's something, I think Dwight has a point here, it is something that is literally just swept under the rug. Nobody wants to talk about it because it is associated with so much shame. And the expression of any claim to sexual assault by a survivor, somehow the survivor yields yet another level of hurt by being blamed for that. It's something that we must deal with. It's a very serious issue. I agree. From Brooklyn, Willie, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Hello, Willie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Pretty good.
Okay. I know you're going to stay strong, my sister. I know that. I'm not worried about that. We got Gary. I know you're going to be fine. That's the least of my concerns. Eugene, I wanted to ask you something, question, because you're the professor now. Remember, we're the students.
No, now, you see that? I keep correcting that thing. We're all students. We learn from each other.
No, my sister. I'm in my little circle. Once you get on, my phone be ringing off the hook. Sometimes I miss it. I said, this sister is just as crazy as everybody else. This is the same. Because people see me laughing, you know, I'm on a plantation, and, you know, people see me laughing by myself. They think I'm crazy. I said, this sister got me out of my mind. You know, but that's not what it is. You know, what I wanted to talk to you about, several things. I don't know if I can get it all out. You know, Brother Clyde and Sister Bonnie, we had a delegate from...
I just want people to know you're talking about the Clintons.
Well, you know, there are things that, you know, you have to really listen carefully to what these people are saying. Because some of the things we take as racist. When she said that young black men were predators, super predators,
super predators, yes.
Well, I have a problem with that. That's not racist. Just think about it. It's an insult for you to Bonnie and Clyde to refer to these people as Bonnie and Clyde. Because Bonnie and Clyde was kindergarten stuff to what these people are doing. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. These are super original gangsters. So when they say super predators, they don't know what they're talking about. Because they could have... I can't believe this. These people are beyond belief in their criminality. So, I mean, let me be a super predator, yeah. But these people, my sister, in my circle, I tell Ava, all of us, now, we have to do this. Because you and Gary, you're doing the work. We have to let America know about you people. That's our job. You see what I'm saying? That's our job. Because today's program, I was listening to Gary. I said, wow. Every day we go back, after we listen live, we go back to the archive and listen again. That's how much information you're putting out there. Our job is really just spreading it and supporting the station. You know, my sister, I'm telling you, I have said over and over again that you should be the voice of Black America.
Oh, no. Please don't wish that on me.
No.
Don't wish that on me.
Wait. The way you lay it out. You see, Brother Farquhar, the same thing. However, you dress up the naked truth. He just gives you the naked truth. You dress things up. That's the only difference. You see what I'm saying? And a lot of people cannot deal with the naked truth, you see? So that's where you come in, because you're making that fashionable. But it's the truth. You see what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying, sister?
Mm-hmm.
You see?
I'm listening.
Yes. No, the other day, all right, I'm saying our people, we really, you know, the things you put forth, we have to piece these things together. You know, on the weekends, that's what I do. I go over the stuff you do on Gary. That's how important it is for me. And the other day I was saying, my God, Donald Trump. I thought about him. I said, wow, you laid it out clearly. The same thing Bloomberg did, according to Forbes magazine. When he went into office, he went in with $4 billion. Now he got $18 billion. Now that's money being transferred from the public coffers to his private. That's what Donald Trump is about. In down in the south where we had, I can't think of the name quite right now. Louisiana, the flood.
Yes.
Katrina.
New Orleans. Uh huh. New Orleans.
New Orleans. Yes. He was down there. It's about wealth transferring the public wealth to private corporations and people. You did a program on the transfer of wealth from the post, for example, the post office, the schools, and we can't put it together. The other day I was talking to a brother from the Nation of Islam. You know, I love them being part. They're good stuff. So I went over to him, I bought like four of them. So I said, brother, I said, brother, let me ask you this. Who are you voting for? He said, I'm voting for Sanders. I said, brother, let me ask you this. Who is Minister Farrakhan's worst enemy? He said, the Jews. I said, then why would you vote for one of them? That doesn't make sense.
So let me ask you.
Uh-huh.
The whole idea here is to open up the ability to independently evaluate things and to provide information that gets people into being analytical to the point of informing the decisions that they make and looking at the world a bit more clinically.
You're right.
I don't believe that we are, I mean, to say, well, okay, this group of people are our enemies, or that group of people are our enemies. We're looking at you're looking at the actions and you're looking at the reactions. What is it that you have as a system? The whole point of systems and the whole point that people follow in life generally is to see through their own survival.
Right.
And we cannot blame anybody for pursuing their survival and their well-being and their welfare. You can't blame them. The issue that we have consistently in the African-American community is its refusal to apply systems that do exist, and its refusal or reluctance about devising systems that will work or even give it a try or to mobilize around things that are in their common interest. When we get into the dynamic of, well, those people over there are doing better than we are, so we see them as enemies. No. Forget about others. You want to look at internally, what are you doing wrong or not doing at all?
Okay.
And how do we correct that with systems that people have devised for us? And this is my constant complaint. The African American community actually, despite the fact that it is so oppressed, also has a huge choice in terms of things that could work. They've been formulated. They're there. All you have to do is to just examine them and apply them and see how they may yield the result you're looking for. But we just won't do it. We don't have the wherewithal, or we don't have the desire. But there's a lot of blame to go along, and we get stuck about blaming. What we got to do is to say, look, we're going to try this because it has a good chance of working, and it therefore might yield a good result that we're looking for. But at least show some kind of evidence that you tried it.
Can I respond?
Sure.
Look, it's not that we have not tried these things. There are forces there that undermine our efforts. For example, the school system in New York, who's there in the destruction of it? And their children. Sister Adelaide Sanford, the vice commissioner of education, remember?
Yes, Adelaide Sanford, Dr. Adelaide Sanford.
Yes. Who undermined her in 100 years' history?
This is what I'm saying. It can't possibly be news today that people will seek to undermine something that is going to be in the interest of a larger community that has already been written off. It can't, as a tactician, you can't expect it to be any different. The question is, why was there not a system of protection? Why was it that she was not only destined to fail, but that it was, in fact, the end result? Where was her protection?
It should have been the community.
Not just the community. It was political protection. It was about community protection. It was about protection from the very people in whose behalf she had been working all of her life. Where was that protection? People just walked away. Well, she's been named, and isn't that great? And you celebrate the symbolic victory. The real victory is in the work of protecting your interests. If she is there, she is a proven person. She is proven to be very faithful to the concept of a meaningful education for all children, but particularly for children of oppressed communities. And yet the community absented itself from the fight. And then the whole thing was lost. That's the problem I have.
Yeah, but I understand that, my sister. But this information, don't forget now. This Clinton herself, I mean, Sister Bonnie, herself, I heard her saying we have lost the information war. The disinformation that's out there, that's very real. And our community are bombarded with that kind of stuff. And those who come to teach us, you are a victim of the same thing.
Well, here's the thing.
People who
put themselves on the line will put themselves on the line no matter what, because that's what they believe themselves to be doing professionally. That's their contribution. So they'll do it.
Right.
The question is about the commitment of people who are they're doing the work. That's what they will do.
That's why.
But when the community falls down, the community refuses to understand the stake it has in supporting these kinds of people, and when it refuses to mobilize around them to protect them because in turn they're protecting their interests, this is what happens.
They join with those who are trying to take you down. That's what happened with you, remember?
Look,
there's only three of us that came to that station and said, no, we're not going to have this.
Absolutely.
We're not going to have this.
Several people showed up from the community and said, we are concerned for your safety. I didn't even have to make a phone call.
You didn't ask us. That's what I'm saying.
I didn't ask anybody for anything.
I know this. We saw what they were planning to do.
Great.
And guess what? It was not a KKK. Same people.
It's the same people.
Based on a lie.
But if you are immersed in the business of political activism and political realism, you accept this as par for the course. This is not an extraordinary event. These are the natural consequences of how politics works. It's raw power. And it happens in liberal circles, revolutionary circles, conservative circles. It doesn't matter. The same dynamic exists across the board. And so, especially in communities that regard themselves as oppressed communities, all the more reason to be hopeful, despite a dismal record of failure, you can't really give up. You always have to maintain a hope that people somehow will come to the realization that they're not without the tools to fight. They only have to apply, you know, it's an applied science. Apply what you have learned. Apply what works. And there are so many things that have been formulated at great expense, including the expense of people's lives. They have put together things that would work. We just have to revisit them and at least in some way begin the process of applying them. And that brings us to the end of the program today, Willie. Great to hear from you.
Great
to hear from everybody. This is the gathering place for us every Friday. We share our thoughts. I very, very much appreciate the sincerity and the frankness and openness with which our thoughts are shared. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can always bet on learning something from Dr. Jack. Reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. This is the weekend. Surround yourselves with really positive people. Reject anything negative, anyone negative, and enjoy life a little bit. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.